Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Hello, everyone. Yes, we are here to talk about the Robin Hood tax. So many of you may well know something about the Robin Hood tax. Some of you might wonder what on earth it's all about. So we're going to explore a little bit about what the Robin Hood tax is, and particularly the title of this seminar is Robin Hood tax, is it just another form of aid? So I want us to start to explore a little bit why that might be an issue, if there are some things around aid that we're not very happy with, and what the needs are, and how maybe there are some ways that a Robin Hood tax could be a bit different than just another form of aid. So the Robin Hood tax campaign that Health Poverty Action is a member of campaigns for taxes on the financial sector to raise money for good causes, for poverty in the UK and internationally, and to tackle climate change. What we've focused on as a campaign, what we think is a kind of tax that could have the potential to raise a significant amount of money for those causes, is a financial transaction tax. So that's what I'm going to concentrate on today, although there are lots of other ideas around about different ways to tax the financial sector, which are also worth exploring. What's the Robin Hood tax campaign? It's a coalition. It spans over 100 different organisations, international development charities like my own, domestic groups focusing on poverty and other issues in the UK, and environmental groups, and trade unions, and faith groups, and many others coming together. And we're linked also, as well as being a UK campaign, to campaigns across Europe and in the United States as well. And there are more than 200,000 people who support the campaign, maybe some of you included. Many of you may have seen the short film with Bill Nighy as a banker, nasty banker, looking a bit, getting a bit tense and tetchy as he's confronted with the idea of a Robin Hood tax. And many of you may have been among the 40,000 people that contacted your parliamentary candidate in the run-up to the election, asking them to support a Robin Hood tax. So before we get going, I want you to move around. And I'm sorry if you're tired and you haven't had much sleep and you're thinking, I just want to sit here for an hour. But just for a couple of minutes, I want to get us moving around. There are some bits of paper stuck to the kind of metal pillars all around this tent with various facts and stats about the financial crisis and about aid. So I'd like you to just go and have a look, have a read, and maybe just keep in mind, remember one of them that strikes you the most. Okay, so once you've had a look at some of the facts, don't worry if you haven't read all of them, do come and sit back down. And if you could, well, I'll let you do that first. Come and sit back down where you were. Okay, and if you could turn to the person next to you, or maybe even someone you don't know, and just share with them the fact or statistic that sort of struck you the most. Maybe it's something you already knew, something that's really new to you, and just share that with them and tell them why that particularly stuck in your mind. All right. Would anyone like to share what they've been struck by? What's really hit them as they've looked around these facts today?
For me, Sarah, it was the multiples. Just, okay. You know, the number of times, you know, just the fact we spent three times more on bottled water or six times more on arms. I wasn't surprised, the arms. The bottled water was there.
Yeah, it puts it into perspective, doesn't it?
The fact that there's no problem whatever in mobilising enormous resources to bail out rich countries, but we can't do anything at all for people who are dying.
Anyone else?
The same thing about bankers, really, and bonuses, and the Barclays note over there. I mean, I just don't understand why there isn't a public outcry and people on the streets.
Mm. There's one on the country's contribution, how it's changed since the 60s, gone down to a half. Probably in the 60s there were less people needing it, but we were probably in less of a position to give it.
Mm. Aid helped to eradicate smallpox. And it was so nice to just see a good news story about what aid can actually achieve.
What struck me was the fact that two-thirds of lesser developed countries appear to be cutting back
their own civil spending to one priority area of health, education, or social protection. Just absolutely astonishing. Yeah. Just showed the effect of what happens when aid budgets dry up.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay, thanks very much, everyone, for sharing. I think we just want to put the Robin Hood tax call within the context that we're in, really, of those truths about aid, about what we prioritise in terms of how we spend our finances, and you know what's happened with the banking sector. And we'll talk a lot more about that as we go along. So the Robin Hood tax, it's not a new thing to talk about taxing the financial transactions and the financial markets. In fact, the idea of a tax, particularly on the buying and selling of money, on currency transactions, was dreamt up in the 1970s by a man called James Tobin, hence the name that many of you will be familiar with, the Tobin tax. And there, in fact, already exists lots of different kinds of financial transaction taxes, which is the kind of umbrella term for lots of ways of taxing different bits of the financial markets. And Health Poverty Action and another group, Stamp Out Poverty, and David Hillman is here from Stamp Out Poverty, we've just brought out some new research which is looking at the existing financial transactions that there have been in dozens of countries, both developed and developing. So it's not a new thing, but it's been there hasn't been very much in terms of taxing currency transactions. There's been pretty much nothing, and the ones that there have been quite small and piecemeal. So what we're talking about is something on a much bigger scale, but it just shows that it's been around for a long time, and it's perfectly doable. What we're calling for as the Robin Hood tax campaign is for a financial transaction tax which could, we believe, raise billions of pounds every year. There have been lots of different estimates of how much could be raised, but one estimate suggests that as much as $400 billion could be raised each year, and there'd be tens of billions of pounds for the UK. And what we've proposed as the Robin Hood tax campaign is that half the proceeds of the tax would go to domestic causes in the UK, and half would go towards international commitments around tackling poverty and climate change. I'm going to concentrate what I talk about in terms of the international development aspects of that, because obviously that's where I'm coming from Health Poverty Action. But those are part of the same package as well. So just to tell you a little bit about Health Poverty Action, we're an international development charity that's worked for over 25 years with some of the poorest communities in the world to try to improve their health. And that's not just about delivering healthcare, but also what are the things that affect that. So it might be water and sanitation, it might be food security and nutrition, and obviously the wider poverty reduction cause as well. And that all requires long-term predictable funding. And it's fine for us to do that on a small scale with communities, and that's really important. But if we're going to really do that on a systematic level, if we're going to tackle those challenges globally, we need something much bigger than just charities doing their bit. And the needs are really great. The impact, as you've read about, of the financial crisis on the poorest countries, we're talking a lot and hearing a lot about the impact of it on our budget deficit, on our public sector, and the cuts that are coming here, which are obviously going to be really profound and quite devastating. But also in the poorest countries in the world, they don't even have the kinds of basic safety nets that we have in place. So a recent report by Oxfam found that there is currently, as a result of the financial crisis, a $56 billion hole in the finances of the poorest countries in the world. And that's not even bearing in mind that actually to tackle the sorts of poverty that they face, they need to scale up those spending commitments, not cut them back. Just an example, many of you will have heard of the Millennium Development Goals, the promises that were made by the international community at the beginning of the century to tackle poverty. Just to meet the health-related Millennium Development Goals, it's estimated around an extra $40 billion a year will be needed up until 2015, when those promises are supposed to be met. So that's a huge increase in spending when actually what we're seeing is a decrease in ability to pay. Just some examples of the kinds of needs from a human point of view. Every day, 1,500 women and more than 10,000 babies die from complications during pregnancy and childbirth. And many more women are left disabled. There are around 2 million HIV-related deaths every year, and almost as many deaths from tuberculosis. And at the same time, there's a huge shortage in the developing world of health workers. There's a shortage of over 4 million doctors and nurses and midwives, and the developing countries are just not in a position to fund training new health workers. So in places where we work, like Rwanda, Sierra Leone, Somaliland, there might be huge needs. Sub-Saharan Africa has 25% of the global disease burden, but only 3% of the world's health workers. And even for those health workers that there aren't the clinics, there aren't the supplies, there aren't the drugs to enable them to do their job. And that poor health, those poor health outcomes, is absolutely linked to poverty. Poverty, poor nutrition, lack of clean water, all the sorts of things that affect you when you're poor increase your chances of getting ill. And similarly, poor health increases poverty. It reduces your chance to be productive. It leads you to sell your assets to cover the costs of treatment. Makes you much more vulnerable. So what I'm trying to say is that not only are these tragic human consequences of the world in which we live, but they're actually having an economic impact. In countries affected by disease, affected by preventable death and injury through pregnancy and childbirth, there's a really massive impact on their economic productivity as a result. Just a couple of statistics. Malaria reduces economic growth by around $12 billion across Africa. Tuberculosis by around 7% of gross domestic product GDP in the worst affected countries. So there's a real danger that those countries are slipping into or have slipped into already a kind of vicious circle there, which they're not going to be able to escape by themselves. So that's some of the reasons why we really have to come to terms with the fact that we need more than just what we currently have, and even what we currently have in terms of aid, in terms of the work that has been done is under threat. So why do we need a Robin Hood tax, and why do we need it now? Obviously, those are some of the realities why that is the case, but the other half of the story, which some of the facts around the room address, is obviously the financial crisis. You've read a little bit about the size of the bank bailouts and the recent reports that they've published in the summer, which have shown that they've really bounced back to business as usual. So there's an unprecedented situation here where the UK banking sector has really contributed to crisis, to recession, to a huge deficit that obviously threatens lots of spending commitments here in the UK, but also has hit poor countries incredibly hard. And that's at a time when they actually need to scale up what they spend to tackle poverty and tackle the future, the immediate and the long-term impacts of climate change. So it's a timely solution. It's something that's time has come. And, you know, lots of people are angry with the banks, angry with the financial sector, and have talked about how banking and the financial sector needs to be put back within a bigger framework of society, a bigger framework of the values that we hold dear as people, as a nation, as a global community. I don't know if you remember Lord Turner, I think it was about a year ago, making some comments about the socially useless nature of some of our financial sector actors. And a Robin Hood tax could go some way to rebuilding that kind of social contract, if you like, between banks and society. It could also obviously raise significant amounts of money for the major financing challenges that we face. And we can talk about aid and traditional forms of aid, but even the aid that there is, is falling. We've got the protection of the aid budget for the moment in the UK, although that's under a lot of threat, under a lot of pressure. But in other countries, that's already been cut and or will be cut in the coming months and years. So there's a really strong need for creative thinking, for new ways of finding the sorts of money that we need to tackle poverty and climate change. So the second part of the title of the seminar is a Robin Hood tax just another kind of aid? Well, why would that matter? What would be the problem if it was just another kind of aid? AIDS had a bit of a knocking recently. It's got quite a bad reputation. And there's been books on dead aid that have been highly influential. There have been stories about corruption, about misuse of aid. The new government has actually talked quite a lot about that as well. And there are some really dreadful examples. And there are some real needs to reform aid. Aid needs to be long-term, it needs to be predictable, it needs to be coordinated. If you're treating people with HIV, for example, you can't say, well, we can fund your treatment for 2 years, but after that we're not so sure, because obviously they need that treatment on an ongoing basis. And too often that hasn't happened. Another problem with aid is that often it's come with strings attached, with conditions like policy changes that have that countries have had to introduce, often to do with opening their markets, cutting public spending, introducing sort of free market reforms, which have often done more harm than good. And a lot of that aid has been given in the form of loans, which have resulted in large debts which those countries have had to repay. And it's still true today that developing countries repay $5 in debt repayments for every dollar they receive in aid. At the same time, there have been problems with the aid that's been spent. There have been poorly designed projects that haven't had an impact or have even caused harm. So just one example is a dam in Argentina, which was built partly with aid money and has since been described as a monument to corruption and has been plagued by social and environmental problems. But having said all of that, aid can work. It's not a silver bullet. It's not going to solve all our problems. But where it does work, it can make a huge difference to people's lives. It provides food security, healthcare, education, clean water, and modest incomes, which can transform the lives of the people at the receiving end. Just one example would be that back in April, UK Aid helped to fund the abolition of fees for pregnant women and new mothers and young children to get healthcare in Sierra Leone. Sierra Leone has some of the worst health outcomes in the world, and that aid has helped to deliver a policy so that those women and children can now go and get free healthcare, which makes so much difference to the possibilities of them getting treatment. So aid can make a real difference, but it can go wrong. And thinking about aid can also raise bigger questions, which I'd like us to reflect on a little bit. What kind of world do we ultimately want to see? What are we working for? Aid from rich countries to poor countries or from wealthy individuals through private charity doesn't do much to alter the power relationships that exist between countries. It doesn't help those countries to become less dependent on aid. If we want to see a world in which there are a whole series of democratic nations whose citizens hold them to account for the way in which they meet their basic needs and their human rights, we're going to have to start thinking differently about the world and aid's place within it. And aid can also affect our perceptions of poverty in the developing world and of the developing world itself. I think back, it's better now, but there are still examples where you see photographs asking for charitable donations, pictures of emaciated babies in Africa with flies on their faces. You don't see it so much anymore, but there's still an element of that in some of the fundraising that some charities do. And what that does is kind of makes us think about these helpless, poor people in other parts of the world who need our help. Now, on the one hand, they do need our help. But on the other hand, that belies a truth about often the resourcefulness, the innovative nature of communities in the developing world to really try and help themselves with the very little that they've got. If we thought about aid maybe more in terms of a fair share for those people, in terms of global solidarity, in terms of social justice, some people argue that we might have a different view of the poor parts of the world and of poverty, maybe a bit less paternalistic, maybe a little bit less patronising. So I think I'd argue that we need aid, but we need to rethink our ideas about aid, and we certainly need more than just aid. We need debt cancellation, we need fair trade rules, we need reforms to the tax system so that companies can't dodge paying taxes in poor countries where they're working. And a Robin Hood tax can be seen as part of that picture. A global financial transactions tax that raises revenue for public goods like development is highly progressive. It's a very progressive form of tax. It's a form of redistribution, if you like. It's fair. It's about justice. So I want to go on to talk about a couple of ways in which a Robin Hood tax could be done in a way that isn't just another form of aid. But I'm interested in what you think. And I'd like you, first of all, to just turn to the people around you, maybe in groups of three or four. What do you think of aid? Do you think, as someone who gives aid, either through personal giving to charity or as a UK taxpayer through the aid budget, does that affect your perceptions of the world's poor and of poverty? Do you think that we should change the way that aid is done? So just spend a few minutes in the groups of people around you discussing those sorts of questions, and then we'll get some feedback. Okay, if you can be drawing your discussions to a close, and it would be great to just get a bit of a sense of the flavour of those conversations. I listened in on a couple, but just to hear from one or two people what your thoughts were about aid. And do wait for the mic.
I used to work overseas for 10 years with the UN, and my budget was huge. The problem with aid, it comes a dependency. And the people just, Somalia is, gross national product there is aid, and they don't want to work. If they had to work for it and trade would be better, the UN in years gone by have spent the amount three times over to irrigate health, education, and poverty three times over. The money has gone like in Swiss bank accounts. If we said to the Swiss bank accounts, Caymans, and things like that, pay the money back to the countries it came from. If you don't, we fine you twice the amount. We need to put pressure on those sort of people to get the money back more than anything else, and proper trade. Things like tea and coffee. If they hold like OPEC with oil does, they get more money back. So they need to get together and trade. China is now doing trade with no problems, they don't really care about, there's no strings. We've got to look at it totally differently from, oh, poor, 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 keeping aid, aid, and aid, because it won't work. It's trade and giving a realistic price for the stuff. That means a cup of coffee goes up from £1 to £9, so be it.
Okay, that's really useful. You raise a few different kinds of issues. Why don't we get a couple of points and then I'll come back on that one.
Yeah, I'd just like to say that I was studying about a topic in development studies when I was at uni, and I really struggled with it because I've been involved in aid work from a very, very young age. My mum and I set up a charity during the war in Kosovo, and now we work all over the world. But the major argument they had in academia was that development was there's now seen post. We were studying post-development, and they were talking about how it was imperialistic. And all these ideas of how it was just a new imperial system all over again since colonialism, but it was now a different system of now using it through aid and development work, which I don't really agree with, but I can see the arguments. But I think aid does work. I'm running a charity with my mum. It does work. But I think, just following on from that gentleman was saying, it needs to be done at different scales. So not just looking at giving aid all the time, but also working at an international, national and local scales to look at trade and debt and aid and all these other things that are going on in the world, and not just, and seeing things in context and not just having one global idea for everywhere.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. That's great. Anyone else want to give us a flavour?
We were just making the point that at a government level, often aid is attached to conditions like foreign policy, like friendly governments, and at that level it can get compromised.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, just one in the middle, and then we'll call it a day.
Yeah, I just feel that sometimes it's used as a way that governments can throw a sop to people who are concerned about what's going on, and it gives them, they can say, right, we're giving this much in aid, and that enables them to avoid confronting the issue of changing the flaming system so that we don't need to give aid in the first place. Because, it works in the same way as having sort of ambulances to clear up after road accidents work, but improving car design so that people aren't so likely to be injured is a much better solution.
Okay. I think all of those points are really valid. Thank you for sharing them. And I think, it's something that I think many people involved in aid work really struggle with. And I don't think that many people would argue, as I said earlier, that aid is a silver bullet and aid is the thing that is going to change the world on its own. And we do need fairer trade rules, and we do need debt cancellation, and we do need to make sure that aid doesn't come with those strings attached. But I think that a lot of the criticisms of aid is about how aid is done and how it's delivered. And there are ways and ways, as they say. One of the things that I mentioned earlier was this example of Sierra Leone, where aid money has been used to abolish fees for health clinics for certain groups of people. And one of the things that the aid money did was it funded putting people on the payroll. So it was quite a specific targeted thing of saying there are lots of people actually working in clinics around Sierra Leone, not on the payroll, doing it sort of informally, if you like, just because the infrastructure wasn't in place. So they're having to take fees from the patients in order to earn a living. If aid puts them on the payroll so that they have a formal job as both with a sort of direct health worker, maybe as a doctor or a midwife, but also in some of the support services like cleaners in the hospital, like security, like drivers, all those kind of roles as well. If they get a formal pay packet then as a result of that aid putting them on the payroll, that's a really sustainable way that aid can work that isn't just about handouts. So that's just one example, I suppose, of how I think aid can make a difference. But certainly, as the gentleman at the back said, there are definitely bad examples and misuse of aid. I used to work for Jubilee Debt Campaign, and one of our big issues was around this whole area of unjust debts, which basically built up from bad aid projects, for example, aid given to corrupt dictators who then pocketed it and put it in Swiss bank accounts. And we've really got to watch and make sure there's a whole set of kind of good aid principles that talk about transparency, that talk about predictability, that talk about the way that aid can be delivered that could help to prevent those sorts of things that happened in the past. But that's not to say that they won't continue to happen. And the idea of aid as influence works both ways, and China is certainly having a big role to play in Africa today, funding all sorts of infrastructure projects in exchange for the rights to mine and the rights to access a lot of the primary resources in those countries. So aid's a complicated beast. But I think, as I say, there are ways in which aid can bring about change. It can be like a trigger that can help bring about change if it's done right. Okay, well, that's just a bit of a a discussion. It's not an easy one to answer, and I think it's one that we have to keep our fingers on the pulse of, because, you know, if aid doesn't work, then it becomes discredited, and it's much more difficult for us to make a case to spend more money tackling poverty in the developing world. So I want us to have a good chance for questions as we come to the end of the seminar. So I want to just, but before we do that, I just want to say a couple of things. First of all, about the way in which perhaps we could think about a Robin Hood tax as more than just another form of aid. And then a little bit about the campaign and where we're going next with the Robin Hood tax campaign. So first of all, one way in which we could think about a Robin Hood tax as more than just aid is maybe in terms of something like a global solidarity tax. There was a report that came out in July from an international task force made up of different countries from around the world that had been tasked with working up proposals for how to find new sources of money for development. And they recommended, funnily enough, a currency transaction tax, the very thing that the Robin Hood tax campaign is calling for. They estimate that a currency transaction tax globally could raise around $33 billion to fund international development. And it wouldn't just be collected and spent by national governments. This would be in the form of a global solidarity tax that would be paid into a central pool and then shared out globally amongst developing nations. And we're really calling for the UK government, the current government, to endorse this report. It was actually the previous Labour government that was one of the 12 countries that commissioned the study. And we want this government to really take that up. Michael Isser, who's the head of the Institute of Chartered Accountants, so not somebody you'd particularly think of as someone endorsing a radical idea, he was involved with this report, and he said that the introduction of that kind of tax would be not a technical problem, only one of political will. So if he's saying it could work, then I think this is something that can be taken quite seriously. Obviously, the idea of global taxes takes us into potentially a whole new domain. But what we're talking about here is really the fact that campaigners have argued for many years, when they've been campaigning for a currency transaction tax, that it would be really important to have some kind of international body that decides how the funds that are raised are spent. And in order to sort of override the self-interest of particular nations, but also to make sure that those funds are spent on international development and don't just disappear into the exchequer. So that it's more than just aid then, it's a global solidarity tax. The countries would still raise the tax, so we're not talking about some kind of big global government raising taxes at this stage anyway, but we can perhaps talk about that. But the money that they collect would go to an international body. And there's already an example of this called UNITAID, which is a tax when you buy a plane ticket. It's an airline solidarity levy. And that's already raised, I think, a couple of billion dollars since it started in 2007. Passengers pay a dollar to fly, around a dollar if you buy an economy ticket, and more if you fly business or first class. And countries raise that tax, and then it's allocated to UNITAID, who decides and has quite a good, inclusive and transparent governance structure that decides how that money is spent. So that's an interesting way of thinking about a Robin Hood tax in a way that's a bit different from traditional forms of aid. The other way that I want to mention, well, I've already mentioned this report that we've just brought out with Stamp Out Poverty on existing financial transaction taxes. And for a long time, we've been talking about the fact that developing countries need to increase the amount of money that they raise themselves domestically, rather than just being dependent on aid and other sorts of external finance. So what we were looking at in the report was not just financial transaction taxes that exist in developed countries, but also in developing countries. And it's possible, there's an estimate that up to $14 billion could be raised by developing countries themselves implementing Robin Hood taxes on their own financial markets. Now, obviously, that's mostly relevant for bigger sort of middle-income developing countries at the moment, but there's the potential for smaller, poorer countries to take that on as they develop. And that could really make quite a significant contribution to public spending in those countries. And it could be earmarked and spent on particular causes. So, for example, in Brazil, there was a financial transaction tax that was used for health spending and particularly for projects, for HIV projects. So it's quite an interesting idea that actually Robin Hood taxes could be introduced by developing countries themselves, raise money in those countries, and then they decide how that money is spent. However, a Robin Hood tax is introduced, the Robin Hood tax campaign believes that it will raise badly needed revenue to tackle poverty and climate change. So I just want to spend the last couple of minutes before we have a bit of time for questions and discussion, talking about what are the opportunities that are coming up. There's been huge momentum in the last year or so on this issue, on taxing the financial sector across the board, from President Obama's passing of his financial regulation bill, from the European Union, which is holding a meeting in a couple of weeks' time of finance ministers to talk about bank levies. And in the UK, there's been really tangible progress here as well. In the emergency budget back in June, George Osborne announced a bank levy that would raise £2.5 billion a year and the potential for a further tax on excessive bank profits and salaries. Now, obviously, that's going to raise nowhere near enough as it stands, £2.5 billion. And we would need a commitment that the revenue from those taxes would be spent tackling poverty and other kind of public goods. However, it is a step in the right direction, and it's something that can be built upon. And I think it's partly as a result of the anger that I think a lot of people feel about the fact that the banks have returned to these significant profits, to these bonuses, they're still failing to lend to small businesses. So you've got, you know, the right-wing press, the Daily Mail, really angry about this. You've got, I think, possibly all of the Labour leadership candidates, certainly the Miliband brothers, coming out publicly supporting a Robin Hood tax. So there's lots of momentum here that we can capitalise on in the coming weeks and months. And next year is going to be key as well. Next year, France has a kind of make poverty history moment when it hosts both the G8 and the G20 summits in 2011. So that will be something to watch too, and there could be real opportunities there. But first of all, there's this summit that's happening in a few weeks' time, towards the end of September, in New York, a United Nations summit on the Millennium Development Goals. And we really hope that that will be an opportunity to show, first of all, the scale of the need, and then the fact that, you know, if we're calling for, many campaigners are calling for a rescue package for the Millennium Development Goals because they're so far off track and so unlikely, if not impossible, to be met by 2015. And so we really need innovative thinking, innovative sources of money, and the Robin Hood tax is a real way of doing that. So the Robin Hood tax could be more than aid. We could think of it in terms of global solidarity taxes. We could think of it in terms of domestic developing country taxes. But to be honest, even if it's decided along old-fashioned aid lines, with all the caveats that we've talked about in terms of how that aid is decided and how it's spent, the Robin Hood tax could make a huge difference to millions of people around the world. You've all been given a card, a Robin Hood tax card, that you can send to your MP. It gives you a little bit more information about the campaign. Do fill that out if you'd like to give it back to me or to Ali, who's waving her hand at the end of the session, and we'll take those and send them off for you. That's fine. So there are ways to get involved. There's ways to take action. But in the last sort of 10 minutes, it would be great to have some questions, some discussion, and I'll invite David from Stamp Out Poverty, who's a real expert in all of these issues as well, to come and join me so that if there are really techie questions that you've got about the minutiae of the workings of the financial transaction tax, I'll leave those to him to answer. Okay, who's first? Over here?
You mentioned the problems of transfer pricing and the ways that large companies get around these problems. How will you structure such a financial transaction tax such that it is not easily avoided or subverted by organisations which have a very strong financial interest to do so.
Good question. Should we take them one at a time?
Let's get
a couple of questions. Okay, so a couple over here, just to make you run a bit.
Yeah, make Dave run.
I thought that was a really good talk, so thanks. And I don't know if it's relevant, but I think that, you know, aid is needed because the way the global economy is organised, that things remain unequal, so that the money remains in the West and poorer countries are just, like, it's really difficult to develop. And I just wondered whether you think that changes will ever happen so that we do become equal, and how that would happen, and if you think they ever will, or if it's just too far gone and it's too unequal.
Hi, you've told us quite a lot about the potential money that could be raised from such a tax and obviously the potential benefits. I was wondering if you could shed any light on any research that's been done onto sort of the optimal rate of such a tax and how it would actually work.
Should we do... Okay, so one more and then we'll do that one.
Thank you for a very interesting talk. I think you've totally convinced me and probably most people for the case for more aid. However, obviously, $4 billion, I think you said, which would come from the UK by Tobin tax, the Robin Hood tax, is at the end of the day paid by all of us, either directly or indirectly through our pension funds, which invest in these financial speculators, or when we import and export goods, or go on holiday and make currency exchanges. Have you considered other forms of tax to raise the $4 billion rather than a Tobin tax, and the merits and demerits of those? For instance, smoking, alcohol, other things we might not like, or short selling, which is another pariah of the financial world.
Put down smoking, I remember.
Right. Okay, let's go. Well, the interesting thing about avoidance is this, that the financial transaction tax is the best way of taxing the markets because it's very, very difficult to get out of paying. If you tax profits or you tax balance sheets, and that's the thing that George Osborne has just said he's going to do, banks are extremely good at moving money around. That's exactly what happens with transfer mispricing. But financial transaction taxes, and we have one in the UK, that's the stamp duty on shares. If you buy shares, you pay 0.5%. And that is done automatically. It's like within the software codes. And therefore, in fact, a financial transaction tax is the best way of doing it. And that's why the banks really don't like this idea. They much prefer other things. I was in a government meeting, the parliamentary launch of Robin Hood tax, and a Conservative MP stood up and said, "I think that a windfall tax is a good idea." And we just thought, that's amazing. I mean, why is he saying that? Because they can budget for that, happens once, and it's over with. They don't like the idea of regularly paying, and that's very difficult to get out of because of the technology that exists now. Optimal rate. Okay, so Robin Hood tax is actually Robin Hood taxes, financial transaction taxes on various things. We already have them on shares. We're looking to have it on foreign exchange. There is also bonds, government bonds and corporate bonds, and there is also derivatives of all of these things, which are variations on all of those products. The optimal rate depends on the market. So in foreign exchange, we're talking about the wholesale market in foreign exchange, which, by the way, just to give you an idea of how big it is, it's worth $4,000 billion a day, right? That's $1,000 billion a year. Now, I think you might get confused with all these zeros, but to give you an idea of how big it is equivalent to a pile of 50-pound notes that would stretch from the surface of the Earth to the surface of the Moon and back again. And all we're saying is that a small slice of that money ought to be redistributed. That is actually the ethos of the Robin Hood tax campaign. So the answer to the question, the optimal rate depends on the market. So with foreign exchange, we are talking about 0.5%. Shares, we already know, is at 0.5%, 0.5%. So we say the average, in our literature, we say the average would be around 0.05%, but it actually depends on the market. Incidents. Do we actually pay for it? The fact is, would we pay for it? How many people in this room trade derivatives? How many of you trade bonds? These are mainly done by the financial sector themselves. The primary incidents, the first layer of who pays, is definitely other financial actors. Wholesale banking in foreign exchange, multi-million deals of foreign exchange. We don't do that. We go away on holiday and we get foreign exchange. These are totally different markets, the retail market and the wholesale market. We pay something like 3%. Banks trading millions and millions pay hundredths of a percent. So they are like different markets, and the primary incidents will be passed between financial actors and large corporates. But just to answer your question, even if we did pay a Robin Hood tax on the currency, and it was passed to us, at half of 0.01%, that would cost 5p on every £1,000. So even if it was passed on, I think we could afford it.
Thanks, David. Just to add a couple of things on that, one of the issues around avoidance is that so much of financial transactions now are computerized and go through centralized systems that actually it's very difficult to avoid that. And we've talked to people who run those systems, and it seems like that's really one of the reasons why this would be the most effective way of taxing the financial sector. We've also done The IPPR, a think tank commission that we commissioned, did some research on how the Robin Hood tax would compare to other kinds of taxes, like VAT, for example. And they found that a Robin Hood tax would be the fairest in terms of who pays. It would be the most progressive, to use that kind of tax language. And so that's one of the reasons why we think it's the best way to go in terms of bringing tax on, you know, raising significant sums of revenue through a progressive form of taxation. How to bring about an equal world so we don't need aid at all?
Easy question.
Easy question to finish off with. I think that, you know, I read someone recently who was saying that they see aid a bit like the welfare state, and there are always going to be people at the bottom of the pile, so we're always going to need aid to help them. I suppose I'd like to think that we might revision that a bit, and perhaps in terms of these sort of global solidarity taxes, thinking about it more in terms of a fair share, fair distribution of the world's riches. We might always have to do that in order to tackle inequality, but we're not even at the moment owning up to the fact that we need to do that. So I think that's one way that we could start to re-envisage the future. I think we are out of time, so I'm sorry about that.
I'm going to say one very short story. This might sound very odd, but I want to thank Goldman Sachs. Why do I want to thank Goldman Sachs? Because when we launched the campaign in February, on February the 10th, we launched with this Bill Nye film that Richard Curtis made. It's a very funny film. If you haven't seen it, go to the website, just Google Robin Hood Tax and see this great film. It's a 3-minute film, and at the end of the film, you vote yes or no as to whether you'd like to support the campaign. So on that first day, everyone involved, all these different organizations, were looking at their monitors, their computers, and we were on the site seeing how all these numbers were going up. And at one point, it had reached 7,000 yeses and 700 noes. And suddenly, in the middle of the afternoon, the noes started shooting up, like, you know, like 1,000 at a time, like, you know. And suddenly, by the end of the afternoon, it was like 7,000 all. And the people doing IT, when there's got to be something wrong with this, and then they posted something saying, we know there's something wrong. The gatekeepers have seen that there is something wrong. Now, it wasn't till later on that day, there were a few of us met together in the pub to sort of have a little kind of drink after the launch. I said, what was that all about? They said, oh, yes, we traced all those votes back to one IP address. And I said, yeah? And they went, yeah, it was a Goldman Sachs IP address. Right? So basically, I went, but that's brilliant. That's a much better story than the launch. So we gave it to The Guardian, and 2 days later, on the front page of The Guardian, it went, Goldman Sachs, clicking in the votes. That was the headline, and we got so much coverage. So I just want to thank Goldman Sachs.
Thanks, David. If you're interested in more information about the campaign, you've got your cards, but Ali, who's here in the grey cardigan, has got some bits and bobs leaflets, and also you can sign up to our mailing list to get more information about the Robin Hood tax and the other things that Health Poverty Action is campaigning on as well. Thanks very much, everyone.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
Sarah and David, come on, let's give them a big round of applause. Thanks for a great talk. Thank you.